This is Talk Is Cheap on KBW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Okay, today, the 30-year anniversary of Warner Creek happened on August 24th at the Wow Hall. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media, and go to radioforall.net.
Picture yourself 30 years ago. It was the peak intensity of the timber wars, the battle over old growth clear cuttings. And earthworks was in the region, putting bodies on the line, trying to slow down the machine. This is yours truly in the lower right corner, Jim Flynn in the middle, being dragged in handcuffs through the snow because the Forest Service was bringing in loggers on snowmobiles over Easter Sunday, when they should have been in church, to try to lay the trees down before the courts were going to hear a lawsuit on Monday. And so, but then the pace and scale of liquidation logging of our old growth was so great, the courts imposed an injunction. And the Forest Service set up these huge reserves for the spotted owl, where any more commercial logging was prohibited for the next 200 years or so. That's how long it takes to grow old growth. We'll enter this in one of these newly designed spotted owl sanctuaries. Arsonists attacked one about an hour's drive from town in the Corn Patch Rollis area. And this is a picture of the Warner Creek fire. It was a big fire at its time. Wildfire activity was much lower. It was kind of a big deal. And of course, in this protected area, they went to war on wildfire, dumping toxic chemicals in the streams, cutting dozers into the dozer land of the Rollis area, felling trees, dropping napalm to back burn with a helitor. So the whole, all the things, $10 million, 2,500 firefighters. It went on for about 13 days till the snow put it out. And that was the first time we kind of raised this issue that it's not just logging, it's also firefighting that impacts the forest. Well, here, they couldn't justify continued logging just for jobs and income and corporate profits. Instead, a new rationale came. Be afraid of fire, be very afraid of falling fire-killed snags. Fire destroys owl habitat. Salvage logging recovers burned forests. And this ideology of logging to prevent future catastrophic wildfire was born in the Warner Creek fire. One of its legacies is for the last 30 years, at times nearly every single timber sale proposal in the Forest Service has been logging for fire prevention. So, this picture, by the way, is not a firefighter, it's a contract logger hired to fall down some of these snags. So if he's running for his life, it's because the trees are out to get him. So anyway, the first spring after the fire, I hiked in this area, and I can feel it now. I just felt like a real crime against nature had been committed, an arson attack on the South Sanctuary. The hill slopes were barren. Some of these giant 200-foot tall trees burnt to black to toast. And this phenomenon of, in the upper right-hand corner, that is a clear cut. The fire didn't erase that tree. That had been logged prior to the fire, but the whole plantation was vaporized. The lower right is looking back at the same thing. We notice this association. Where there were clear cuts that burned over, the adjacent old growth burned really severely because the flames from those plantations hurled into the old growth canopy. So your proverbial moonscape burned forests are mostly the clear cuts there. But soon enough, the green up happens. And it's just the stunning beauty of Bunchgrass Ridge greening up and seeing the complex of meadows and different degrees of intensity, severity. Some of those fire sculpted trees were works of art in themselves, and just there was a kind of, you know, black is beautiful, you know, and then the heart of the burn, and there's a ring of fire as a heart of green in the Kelsey Creek old growth basin that scientists determined hasn't burned in over 8 centuries prior, and it still put out the Warner Creek fire on its own. And so the Forest Service, given intentions, we want to maybe salvage log this. So Katya and I, we started sponsoring fire ecology tours to get people into experience what was kind of an exotic experience. Very few people hiked in a burnt forest. And we hosted all kinds of hikes. Cumulatively, hundreds of people and groups of 20 or 30 or maybe even a carload would come up and travel through the burn. And all kinds of people. We got the Cascade Science School. It's a summer camp for science nerds. These kids come from all over the country. And this is one of their field trips. This is Hazel in the left photo, showing kids the next owl growth forest growing at their feet. And then I worked with the local high school, alternative high school, the Northwest Youth Corps. They're for at-risk youth, and they're affectionately calling my hoods in the woods. And we went out and we made these snag longevity monitoring plots. How long will these fire kill trees stand? We want to know. We never studied them. We just cut them down in the past. So it's odd, but I was part of that renunciation of tree spiking and Earth First. And then here I wind up tree spiking for science of sort. But anyway, it was strategy. I wanted these kids to establish this plot and be committed, because this is something they're going to have to hand off to their kids and their grandkids and defend this place for science. And we had college students from all over the country coming to tour this as well. In the right-hand photo, you can barely see it, but there's my baby daughter in my backpack. And here's a close-up, and you know, babies love burns. You should see our daughter now. Anyway. So, sure enough, here comes a proposal from an area that was prohibited from further logging for the next 200 years. It became one of the nation's largest timber sale proposals of its time. 1,200 acres, yanking out 49 million board feet. Going to carpet bomb this area, this row this area with clear cuts. And again, they were using the stumps from the prior, older clear cuts to mark out the new clear cuts. They were metastasizing. It was just hideous. All kinds of town actions to protest this, from Tim Ream's famous 75-day hunger strike to people marching along Highway 58 through the city of Oak Ridge. On Halloween, we had the Monster Mash demo. The Yellow Ribbon Coalition was the timber industry's unit, and we had a mummy wrapped with yellow ribbons going, "Salvage the dead, don't let them rot," and it was just a great hit, and the media ate it up. And there's the original ranger station, Oak Ridge, a rally there. All kinds of things happening in town. And we try to generate public comments and engagement. And matter of fact, we generated more comment letters, outrage about arson, outrage about salvaging arson, more comment letters than any other timber sale in the Willamette National Forest history. Even in their 10-year forest plan, they were just blown away. Part of the magic of that was this mad lib that someone was going to talk about later. But our position is pretty strong. Not one black stick gets hauled out as commercial salvage. Save Warner Creek from the salvage saws. It was just simple. But, you know, we delayed it, we extended it, we generated all these comments, but finally, I guess inevitably, they came out with a plan to log it. And one of the beautiful things is we were able to submit our own alternative in the range of alternatives. It was a plan not to cut it and not to just leave it alone. We had all kinds of activities to make it a living, learning, research natural area, to study natural fire recovery. That's the map of our alternative. But it was still going to be cut, so local folks sued it. And won. First time ever, a fire salvage timber sale was declared illegal and tossed out by the courts. And it was amazing. And reflective of just thousands of people sending comments or petitions or protesting, a dozen appeals. No arson, no salvage for arson, and so don't reward it. But then the salvage logging rider was passed, suspending all environmental laws pertaining to salvage logging. And the Forest Service went wild. They doubled the cut, and all these black areas are the clear cuts. 200-acre contiguous clear cut on the south side of the mountain. You can see it from Highway 58, and there was no laws going to stop them. So when environmental laws are outlawed, it takes environmental outlaws to uphold the law. Exactly what we did. This upper left corner is the Forest Service in the dark of night set up a road lock gate. And folks just took it over in broad daylight, and they just camped. I mean, it was the widest, most level spot up on the mountain at that point. The logical place to set up camp, and it evolved over time into this whole elaborate village, and the fire still burned in Warner Creek every night around the campfire. And then something else also happened. The Forest Service Road 2408 became a kind of a mass monkey wrenching thing where people, it became a public art kind of a performance art thing. Everyone could kick a rock, dig a ditch, whatever. And all kinds of elaborate structures built to try to impede loggers from going up there. Many barricades happened. It was all different designs. Here's Katya contemplating, what would a baby on top of a boulder barricade do to stop them? Believe me, we have contributed to the delinquency of our minor, but that's another story. Of course, what captured the imagination of the nation was the fort, Fort Warner. It was more like something out of F Troop or Monty Python's than real things, but it was amazing. The real amazing thing is sustaining that through the scorching suns of the summer and the deep wet snows of Cascadia winter. 8 mile snowshoe trek to supply the camp with food. And that lower left is the tops of a pickup truck and an RV camper that got buried in snow 24/7 for 350 days or more. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And so they didn't get away with burying up loggers on snowmobiles to cut the trees down. They were stopped right there by eternal vigilance. At long last, after a long campaign, 5 years, 6 years of struggle, by presidential decree, Bill Clinton withdrew the timber sale. Now, that's where that ended. I kept continuing to say, let's go forward with our original vision. Make this a living learning center, a research natural area, preserved and protected in perpetuity. And so, but we weren't constrained by the limits of the fire. That's the red outline of this map. 38,000 acres seems about right for what fires can do on the west side at the right conditions. And all those yellow areas are the roadless areas. That would be another layer of protection. So that's another story for another time. But to sum it all up. Oh, what? You know, it was a braided tale of many stories, many unsung heroes, much magic in community-based resistance, and all these different things that have been done years before Cascadia Free State was constructed and occupied. That laid the foundation for the success of that campaign, as well as the heroes at Stavis. So never underestimate the power of the pen to prepare the ground for a pounding of a pickaxe. Three words that are the spirit of that thing was the audacity and the ingenuity, look at that corner there, and the tenacity. And with those three ingredients, there's nothing stopping people, the power of people. All right, thank you so much.
I'd like to welcome Sis to the stage for a story. Let's give them a round of applause. Thank you.
Oh, great. There's nothing like having women watch you.
19th century meets the 21st century. My name is Mick Garvin. I wasn't really clever enough to remember any forest name I might have picked up, so I just stuck with what everybody called me. I've been doing this sort of thing, I guess, for some years before it got around to Warner Creek, and I'll blame the woman on my left for that. We went through back when we were just, it was extremely personal, there were no big group campaigns, and then we moved into fun stuff like the Redwood Summer Campaigns and others and moved up into Warner Creek. And at the time I was working for contracting for the Forest Service in the Rigdon District, which is now the southern portion of the Willamette, Southern Willamette District, Middle Fork Willamette, and camping out at the blockade. And I found out quickly that, like in many other places, the people in the office don't necessarily talk to the cops, and the cops don't talk to the people in the office. So it was over a year before the people I was working for understood that I was one of the campers at the blockade. Vern was very disappointed. Dylan, we continued our working relationship for another 20 years before she finally retired. But we then, my wife and I, who's also featured on that infamous photograph, she's tired of seeing, but the Weekly owns the rights to it, so it comes up every anniversary. She and I started a little forest company of our own, named it the Warner Creek Company, just so we could sit there with the agency and smile at them. And I found out that actually the BLM knew what was going on too, and they were very amused that we were poking fun at the Forest Service. But it went on and on and on, and into the 2000s, and now we were still into it again. I invite you to come up and hike with us on a given weekend. Can't tell you when now. That would be against the security culture. And get ready for the next round, because it doesn't stop and we could use all the help. And I'm glad to see younger people than us here tonight.
Okay. I'm Katia Juliana, and not sure how to do a bio in 3 minutes. It's meaningful, but I'm just going to tell a little story. In 1989, I attended a nonviolence training on a campus co-op house, and I was preparing to go down to Nevada test site to protest nuclear weapons testing in the desert. And someone literally ran in at the end of the training, and they said, "They're logging Breitenbush. We have to go stop them." And I was like, "Oh, and we have all these great nonviolent skills to use." And so we ran home, I got a sleeping bag and a toothbrush, and we met back in an hour, and I jumped in somebody's van, and we drove into the night, and we arrived at Breitenbush, and I thought, oh, Hot Springs, we'll get a good night's sleep, and wake up in the morning and talk to the loggers. No. We got there, and it was full on. They dumped us out of the car, and we got to work. We didn't get any sleep. It was a long night. Building barricades with rocks and down trees, and it was my introduction to direct action and forest defense and a community that I grew to love very deeply, with a lot of people in this room that I met that night in 1989. So here's to Breitenbush actions. It was a very thrilling night, and it set the stage for me for my love of the forest. My awareness that it was being destroyed empowered me to take action. The following year, I left and did a cross-country walk, a walk from Los Angeles to New York City with about 100 people on the Global Walk for a Livable World.
Yeah.
And we talked to people about global war in our lifetimes. We talked about forest destruction, sustainability, and all those environmental issues. When I came back, I reconnected with my Earth First friends, and I got assigned a project to monitor timber sales up in the Oak Ridge Ranger Station. And in the fall of 1991, the Warner Creek Fire happened, and I got sent up to the public tour, the first group of people to go up and see the burn after it had just been put out by the snow. Stumps were still smoldering, and I sat on the bus with this guy named Tim that I had remembered from Breitenbush. And when we were on that bus ride, we were like, they can't log this place. This place is cool, and we're gonna work to save it. So we started at that time our scheming and our plotting to try to protect that place. So we spent the next 4 years doing that, and as you know, the rest there is history. Since then, I've had two beautiful children. A lot of you know my daughter, and I have also a lovely son. So I have a couple bonus kids too. So raise your hands, kids. They're my
Oops. My name is Hazel. I know a lot of you here from current day organizing here in Eugene. I just moved to Portland recently, but I was living in Eugene. So shout out Free Palestine. See a lot of you out here. So now I live in Portland, but come back when I can. And I'm also going to start by sharing how I ended up at Warner Creek. It's pretty random. So I was visiting, I had just move to Bend. I was like maybe going to move to Bend, but maybe not. And I came over with a group of friends to go to the Saturday market. Am I yelling? And so one of my friends, who some of you know, Lisa, we broke off from the group, we started wandering around, and very quickly we ran into Tim and Shannon, who were doing a hunger strike on the steps of the federal building. Tim was talking to a reporter, we were like, what's going on? Shannon came up to us, talked to us for a long time, and told us everything we needed to know about how to get up to Warner Creek. We went back to our friends at the farmer's market. We said, we're not going back to Bend with you. And they were like, what? And we're like, no, we're staying here. And we actually, we went to a Monday night meeting. There were one cool, really cool thing about Warren Creek. There were standing Monday night meetings every Monday night. There were also standing hikes every Sunday. So these were key things in the campaign that I personally think can be replicated in future campaigns, because having that consistency was amazing. So we went to a Monday night meeting, we got plugged in to be a volunteer at Wow Hall for a Casey Neal show. We were part of like a mosh pit and we were like, oh my God, this crew is amazing. And then, we ended up getting out to Warner Creek. So big shout out to really visual outreach methods and easy to access populated locations, because that's how you get people. So as mentioned, I continue to do a lot of this work now, not just environmental and climate issues, but social justice issues. I think that connecting all of them is really important. I also work for the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance, so I want to give a big shout out to them as well. They're a great group, check it out. And community work, the not nonprofit stuff is super important. So big shout out to all of that too. So much of that happening in Eugene.
So we're gonna have a couple of questions. You have 3 minutes each to answer the question. And the first question is, what did it take to sustain Cascadia Free State? So please include things like what daily life was like in camp and or what it was like being support in town and organizing support from town. Go ahead, Nick.
A lot of bagels. Not fresh. And a lot of tofu, mostly fresh. And in the wintertime, it was a long hump with a toboggan with propane and stale bagels up the hill. There weren't that many people that would go through that, and I wish Carla was here tonight. She was a hero there. She also got me stuck up there because she decided to get up there and then decided not to come back, and I was waiting down the hill and wound up getting my Jeep stuck behind some downed trees. Had to walk back to Oak Ridge. But it took a ton of people, the outreach that Katya and Tim laid down and hiked us in there for years. And we knew that it was gonna come to this, and fortunately we had a chance to get ourselves acquainted with each other and build a community, build the trust. And when it really came down that we had to go for the road, we went for the road. And we had some spare time. You get bored, you come up with an idea like, let's make a wall, let's have a catwalk, let's do Bad Monty Python. It took a lot of humor and putting up with discomfort and some strange ideas. There was a movement to put some concertina wire through the scree above the camp. That was seen as a little too militaristic. But we didn't explode under the drama. We managed to just, okay, that's a great idea, nah. The wall was built though, and we had a good time with that. And we took this out there and continued on for years and years and years. We're thinking of a 30th anniversary road show. Next year we'll be in Idaho celebrating the 30th anniversary of Jack Squat. In 99, we're thinking about going back to Seattle. And invite you all to join the pack because we are a lot of fun. You can tell by some of the pictures that we're not suffering, not much. And we hadn't all just eaten the berries to get there. We were just having a great time and enjoying each other's company. And the woman that was up on the wall with me, I married 2 years later. So there's things to be had in this association. I encourage you to come out and experience that.
Okay. Well, when I think about sustaining Cascadia Free State and the campaign in general, I think about community, not just a community of activists that you're in an affinity group with and you're generally working with, but the larger community. For us at Warner, that was to a large degree the city of Eugene. So in the 4 years between when the fire stopped burning and the action started, we had brought probably 1,000 or more people up to Warner Creek in lots of different venues. We did fire ecology field conferences and camped out. We did hikes, as Hazel said, nonstop. And we just did a lot of education. We did road shows all around in community colleges and universities, etc. So our objective was to get people in love with the place and get them to want to defend it. And when the occupation started in 1995, Warner Creek was a household word in Eugene. People knew about the issues, they understood it. It's like saving a burned forest is really hard to sell, and we were able to get people to understand the nuance there. And so the community of Eugene was very supportive, and a favorite memory of mine is in the very early days of September 1995, when we were just getting started up in the hill, we rolled down on Saturday morning, jumped in a couple trucks, and came down off the hill in our camo and our grungy selves, and jumped into the middle of the Eugene Celebration Parade. And just as luck would have it, happened to jump behind the Forest Service and Smokey the Bear. Our wild selves. People were just booing the Forest Service, and they'd see us and they'd be like, yeah! It was great fun, and it really was the community cheering us on. And I just feel like if you're gonna have a really successful campaign, you need community to support you and cheer you on it, however that took. So personally for me, once we went into the road occupation, I was busy having babies. So I did a lot with a baby on my lap and making phone calls and doing all kinds of things, trying to really support, doing tons and tons of media and just a lot of behind the scenes support. I did get a lot of donated bagels, so you're welcome. And it was really fun to call a random business in Eugene and say, hi, I'm with the Warner Creek campaign, and have them say, what do you need? And I think that's a really large part.
Okay, so as Katya said, I'm just gonna double up on that. Hundreds, as far as what did it take to sustain Cascadia Free State? Hundreds of people. And I would say thousands, but I think it was a couple thousand, not tens of thousands. But I think there was more than 1,000 people involved. And in-town support was crucial. A lot of times the people at the blockade, the people that got arrested, like me, get the credit, but it was all the people doing everything from activating phone trees, which some of you probably don't know what a phone tree is, but we had just regular landlines then, for the most part, and things like getting the food donations, giving the food donations, doing the media work, doing legal work, tabling at the Saturday market, tabling in front of Sundance. That stuff is boring. It's actually not that cool. And then when you're tabling, you're getting people to sign a postcard or a petition. And you have to deal with everything that you think about. Maybe nobody's listening, maybe nobody cares. But the point of doing that stuff isn't necessarily always the number of petition signatures. It's just an opportunity to engage people, to tell them what's going on, and then get them more involved in other stuff. So it was that. It was both the in-town aspect, the 5 years ahead of time, all that organizing, the direct action, everything together, I believe that it was that combination of tactics that made Warner Creek work, and that was what a lot of sustaining Warner Creek was, a combination of direct action along with organizing, base building work, media, lobbying, legal strategies. Sometimes we felt like we had to hold our nose to some of that stuff, but we felt like having a strategy that really included a lot of tactics was what would help. And I believe that it is what would help, what helped. So life was very varied there. Up at camp, at the blockade, sometimes there was 3 people, sometimes there was 50 people, sometimes there was music and it was super fun, sometimes it was boring. Sometimes we had whiskey, sometimes we didn't have any whiskey. Sometimes we were like, oh my god, it's only 2 of us, and like, what's gonna happen? We're like screwed. And it was disempowering sometimes, and we had to push through that. And then sometimes there'd be tons of people that would show up. There'd be school groups. There'd be, you know, so much stuff, and it'd be super empowering. And we had to ride the waves. Another thing about life at camp, I see the time really quick, is that we did a lot of back and forth, and there were campaigns all over the place, especially in the summer. There was a free state in Southern Oregon. There was a free state in Idaho. So sometimes part of life at Warner Creek was not being there. And we had to schedule people to be at Warner Creek so that everybody else could run around and go to all the places. So it was like a scheduling feat. So, thank you. Google Calendar. No Google Calendar then.
What are some of the lessons learned and key takeaways from Warner Creek? And how can we take any of these lessons and takeaways forward into today's movements? Mick.
I go back a little bit of ways as far as along with Katya, who I met in 90, I think. One thing I took from this was just singularity of purpose. And yes, when you get bored, think of something to do before you start doing silly things. But we developed this by layering on, meeting the same people campaign after campaign. So by the time you got through the Redwoods and you got through the Roadless campaigns in Idaho, and Koch is putting the call out, they're coming for Warner Creek, and you say, well, yeah, they said that. But anyway, we did it, and we knew each other beforehand, and it was really key to being able to carry on and draw more people in that took confidence from this core group of people that have been active together for 5 or 6 or 7 years. And that has carried forth with the Cascadians and gotten us through tackling new things, such as the campaign in the Elliott State Forest, which was a place I never thought that we would wind up fighting, let alone winning. And it was the direct action contingent, sorry about this, Wildlands, that drew Wildlands to get into it too. I think they saw it as, that's a state forest campaign. I don't know if we're up for that. But the kids were getting in there and for years blocking, getting their asses tactically kicked, but never giving up. And in the end, everybody piles in on the campaign, and now Elliott is something besides a timber resource to the state. We kept connections with each other that I think is the best thing I've gotten out of this, is a bunch of friends that I've known for, well, maybe not half my life, but for a long time. And that counts for more than you can know. To know that you'll give these people your time and they will give you theirs, because you've got that shared experience, the shared misery, that can really be a glue. If you are all in a winter camp and you dealt with it and you didn't lose your mind on anybody, you'll laugh about that. It's going to be something to tell the kids when they come up and say, you don't know what it's like. Because that's what you're supposed to do when you get old. So I took a lot away from it, but what I really took away from it was an incredible community of friends.
Have fun. Find your people. Do actions that you can be proud of and become a good ancestor. You know, we're facing overwhelming conditions. And that can come with a huge sense of grief, loss, You have to find joy and humor. That's where your hope's going to come from, and it will sustain you. So I'm going to tell you a couple of funny stories. Well, who remembers fax machines? You loaded, kids, you loaded before we had email, you loaded this roll of paper. It's like 100 feet of paper. And you'd send a fax, and it would go through, and it would cut the paper. And we thought, I wonder how long it will go before it cuts the paper. So we got a lot of comments. You can turn around the back wall and see there's 26 feet of pages taped together. And that got sent to Peter DeFazio, and to this day, we still laugh about that roll of paper, water falling off someone's desk and filling up the floor. So we tried to do funny things. One time I was wondering, you know, we want to get a lot of comment letters for this DEIS. And so I was talking to somebody kind of in the Forest Service who's like, how do I get a lot of letters and what counts? And they said, it has to be original letters. Like, can we do a form letter and have different people sign their names? Like, no, they have to give their own, they have to give their own input. So I was like, what about a Mad Lib? You know, like when you're kids and you write the naughty words in. So we made a Mad Lib, and it was awesome. And unfortunately for the Forest Service, their preferred alternative was alternative F. So we may have had some fun with that. And we got hundreds of people to do these. We sit in front of Sundance on Sunday afternoons and get people to sign them. We put it on the back of the Eugene Weekly. We do what we needed to do to get the word out. And we heard that some were really good, and the Forest Service even taped some up in their office walls. Okay. Another time we wanted to get a ton of people up to the Forest Service auction. And this was a time when the punk anarchist scene was starting to happen at Whitaker. The Rainbows had come back and the Rainbow Gathering. They were hanging out at Sundance. We're like, we gotta get everybody up there. So we had the same event. We made two posters. One was Promise for the Forest. Come help chant for the spotted owl. That one up at Sundance. And then we made another one with a bloody stump and a chainsaw and a cougar and it's action at the auction. Come show your outrage. They all came. And so we just, you know, we used the tools of humor and creativity, authenticity, honesty, and love for place. And I think the combination of those things, the combinations of the people that we were so fortunate to have join us, and the community that that came up really is what made Warner Creek so unique. And I do have a final thought, even though I'm out of time, I'll be quick. Make your activism sustainable, and how you do that to stay in the game for a long haul is take a lesson from geese. I love birds, and what geese do is they fly long distances with big bodies, and there's a leader out front, and then they make a V shape. And the people behind that leader get benefit from those in front. And when the leader gets tired, nobody says, you're our leader, you need to stay out there, because they would fall out of the sky. The leader goes to the back, and they take the benefit of the lift from the group. And then someone else moves into that front position. So be like the geese. Keep honking, keep flying.
So we kind of purposely decided we're going to focus more on the things we did well, but I want to touch on one thing that I think we have had and have room for improvement, because we weren't perfect at Warner Creek. We actually made a lot of mistakes, but there's not enough time to talk about all of them. But then and now, you know, we need to do more to create the conditions for multiracial cross-class campaigns, campaigns and movements, particularly in the environmental scene, and ones that can really bridge the gap between the urban and rural divide and break down the false dichotomy between environmental and social justice issues. And I want to talk about Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge was the nearest town to Warner Creek. Yep. There's somebody at this table, some people in the room who now live in Oak Ridge. They're doing amazing community work in Oak Ridge. Earth Firsters, people from Warner Creek, living in Oak Ridge. At the time, though, Oak Ridge was very hostile. It was very difficult for us to do outreach there. There was one time when there was a basketball game between blockaders, Warner Creek people, and people in Oak Ridge, and that was really cool. But I think that we could have done more, even though it was hostile. And I also think that that at the time, we didn't even know the word just transition. So that's something that we can really focus on now, because now we do know about a just transition. And we can put more into that. So other things, there's so much more I could say, but I just don't have enough time. So hopefully you get the idea. But things that I think to take away and use today is creating lots of different roles for people to step into and build on, and really valuing all those roles. Sometimes people are scared of doing media, and I get that, but if you look on these tables and all around the walls, there was so much media, and that's part of how we won Werner Creek, so just keep that in mind. And there were people that had to do all that work. It's hard, grunt work. The main thing is that I feel like Werner Creek stands as an example of collective action and what we can do when we come together. So it wasn't done or backed by a nonprofit. There were some nonprofits involved, but not that much, really. So much happened just with incoming donations, food, supplies, sometimes money, but not even that much money. And we really had a foundation that was built on, you know, some of the principles from some of the campaigns Katya was talking about, the anti-nukes movement, the anarchist movement, things like mutual aid, non-hierarchical organizing, consensus decision making, and of course direct action. I think this was one of our strengths. And another thing is really in person, place-based, and committed. I think that was the main strength of Werner Creek, so if we can bring that back, more in-person stuff, more place-based thing, more road shows, stuff like that.
Hey everyone, thank you so much to those panelists. I feel so inspired and motivated to continue the fight into the future, so just thank you for everyone for being here. My name is Madeline. I work with Cascadia Wildlands. We're an organization that was born out of the Werner Creek movement. And in the spirit of all this wonderful stories that I just heard, I'm going to tell you just a quick, tiny little story about how I got involved in this work. And it really was when I was getting out of undergrad at U of O. I didn't know what I was going to do, and so I decided to start volunteering with the organization Cascadia Wildlands, and I really started to understand what was happening to our public lands, and the devastation was shocking to me. It happened to be that summer, the 25th anniversary of Werner Creek, I went up to the Werner Creek area to meet folks with Cascadia Wildlands and also a lot of the people who were involved with this campaign, and really just emphasizing the joy and revelry and happiness that is so important to all of these movements. We just had a campfire and I heard stories and I got connected with these folks and started to learn the story of Werner Creek. And I took the lessons from this campaign into my own campaigns because not long after that we were fighting a big old growth project in the Willamette National Forest called the Flat Country Project. And I know I have a short amount of time, so I won't get into all the details, but it was really inspiring to learn about Werner Creek and use that diversity of tactics that are so effective into that campaign, and it was successful. So that was really cool. And unfortunately, as you all are probably painfully aware of, there's many more fights to fight. The fight against old growth logging did not end with Werner Creek. The fight is ongoing across the nation and across the world. And so I'm just going to share a few about a few campaigns that are ongoing right now. This is not an exhaustive list. There's so much happening. There's so many ways to plug in. Not locally. I'll start with a couple that are not local and get down into some local ones. One that's happening right now is down at the border in the San Rafael Valley, just outside of Tucson, Arizona. There's an active tree sit happening right now. Led by queer and femme and indigenous leaders in the area, and they're fighting against, they're blockading the construction of a border wall. And it's actually cross nations. So there's a tree sit on the US side, and there's an active call for folks to go down there and support that. So I know it's not here, but if you are able to provide resources or be there, there's a call for folks to help out down there. It's super inspiring and a really amazing example of intersectional work that's so important for our movements now, that the tactics that are being used down there, tree sitting, blockading, people wouldn't know to use those tactics if it weren't for the movements from years ago. So it's really cool to see that for them. Okay, also, not here in Oregon in the Pacific Northwest, but in the Pacific Northwest at large, there is active, ongoing, really horrendous old-growth logging happening in Vancouver, BC. There is also an active call for folks to go down there, or go up there. I do not know how to pronounce the indigenous name. It's Ma'amtigila land, there's a lot of really amazing indigenous leaders up there who are working to defend the forests up there. There's yellow cedar trees up there. Who knows about yellow cedar trees? They're so cool. They've been documented to be up to 1,800 years old, these trees grow. And they're cutting them down up in Vancouver. And it's super devastating, so I know, yeah, boo. So that's another campaign that if folks are able to help or support that or follow it, just know that these horrendous things are happening all around us. And in fact, here in Oregon, there are a couple of things happening. So in Western Oregon, the lands that are managed by the Bureau of Land Management, they are currently under a plan that is getting revised that is going to increase the logging of these lands by 4 or 5 times. And we know that, yes, there's a lot of old growth forests left up in the greater northern part of the Cascadia bioregion in southeast Alaska. But down here in Oregon, some of the last old growth forests that we have here, the majority of that is in the Coast Range here on lands managed by the BLM. And so this is a really, really hot issue. They're continuing on with the process, and so it hasn't, chainsaws aren't getting out there right now, but under the Trump administration, we can only expect it to get worse. And so just putting that little bug in your ear to keep an eye on and visit these places, and there's lots of information on our website and other places and around town. So that's one thing that's happening here and on lands managed by the BLM. But I have more on my list, I'm sorry to say. There is, in Eastern Oregon, a similar thing is happening with the plan revisions. So the Blue Mountains plan revision is also underway, and it also wants to increase logging. Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is a really incredible, inspiring organization. Everybody, who knows? I encourage you to visit their table. They always are needing volunteers in Eastern Oregon to go and do field surveys of the timber sales out there and fight against the Blue Mountains plan revisions. Another one in Oregon. Southeastern Oregon, or in Eastern Oregon also, near the McDermott Caldera in Malheur County, it has vital habitat, and it's a corridor for major wildlife species, such as the sage grouse, which are so cool. I love those sage grouse. The pronghorn antelope and the Lahontan cutthroat trout, which I don't know much about. But like all of these habitats, they are just so important for habitat and for the longevity of our species as well. But right now, So this area around McDermott Caldera in Malheur County holds really historical and cultural significance for the Fort McDermott, Paiute, Shoshone, and Bannock tribes. And the area spans Oregon and Nevada, and there's been ongoing resistance against proposed lithium mining. And unfortunately, Governor Kotek is not doing her part and is approving permits for this to go through. So that's really bad. Okay. One more I want to share with you, or two more, one and a half more.
One more.
Okay. Who's heard about the ROTUS rule?
Yeah.
So this is a nationwide issue. The ROTUS rule is incredibly important. It protects 45 million acres across the country and about 2 million acres here in Oregon. There is currently an opportunity to do one of those tactics that Hazel and others were sharing up here. You can write a comment. You can write a comment right now until September 21st, 9 p.m. And there's lots of avenues for you to do that. There's action alerts on Cascadia Wildlands websites and other places. You can write a postcard, you can call your electeds, you can do all of these things that are so important. You know, who knows if they're actually going to listen to the comments, but it's really important that we keep that record and show that we don't want the ROTUS rule to be repealed. Finally, to end on a kind of a positive note, we have a really cool opportunity here in Eugene. Who's heard of the Eugene Clean Energy Fund? Okay, so check this out. So the Eugene Clean Energy Fund would establish a 2% fee on corporations earning more than $1 billion. So a tax on corporations.
Yeah.
It's gonna fund really important energy incentives from EWEB. So we're gonna get funding for folks to have actual air conditioning and weatherization on their homes, among many, many other projects that we need here in Eugene. So this is gonna be coming up on the ballot this fall. So please, please support ESEF. And finally, I just wanna say one last little thing, which is I'm so inspired by you all, and I really appreciate you all being here because this is the movement from the past today and into the future, the next 30 years.